You're listening to the Monetary Blog from the FOMC Insight Engine. This is the Axis. Three actors, one architecture, and the coordination register that debuted within 24 hours of the hearing. The pillars documented Kevin Warsh's confirmation testimony as a program. Four operational pillars, a chair's qualification, and a framing premise about conditional independence, that compressed cleanly from over 100 distinct claims into one load-bearing architecture. Its closing sentence left a specific question open. The doctrine is Warsh's. What the chairmanship produces will say whose purposes the doctrine served. That closing presumed the doctrine was Warsh's own. It is a defensible presumption. He wrote it across 15 years of Hoover papers, op-eds, and speeches, in opposition to a consensus he did not join. But the presumption is incomplete. The doctrine is not held by Warsh alone. Its specific propositions, specific mechanisms, and in several places its specific phrasing appear in the published writing of the sitting Treasury Secretary and in the public statements of the hedge fund principal whose capital Warsh has been deploying for the past decade. The three actors have named each other on the record. They have published the architecture, the specification. The conventional reading of what is coming treats it as unformed. Bloomberg's February 2026 reporting on Warsh's proposal for a Treasury-Fed accord called the idea cryptic. Senate Democrats at Warsh's confirmation hearing pressed him as if the relationship between his Fed and Bessent's Treasury remained open to negotiation. Market commentary has framed the accord as a future event that might or might not materialize, depending on confirmation, tone, and political weather. This reading is wrong in a specific way. The accord has been specified, in print, on television, in hearing testimony, under oath, by each of the three actors, across 14 months of public record. What is coming is not cryptic. It is codified prior. The gap between what has been specified and what has been publicly recognized as specified is the gap worth closing. The claim is testable. The three actors have left a documentary record. Either the record shows convergence at the level of shared mechanisms, shared phrasing, shared diagnostic vocabulary, and publicly acknowledged professional history, or it does not. Either the convergence has structure, a division of intellectual labor that parallel advocates would not produce, or it is coincidence the reader can explain by independent reasoning. Either the coordination register the three have described in writing is operational, or it remains theoretical. These are testable claims. The record answers each. The architecture. The doctrine the three actors share is not lane discipline in the simple sense. It is two register: narrow operational independence on monetary policy proper and explicit coordination with the rest of government on everything else. The architecture is specified, in print and in testimony, by each of the three. Bessent, writing in Gain of Function Monetary Policy in spring 2025, 9 months before his confirmation as Treasury Secretary. From the Scott Bessent, looking ahead, it is essential the Fed commit to scaling back its distortionary impact on markets. At a minimum, this likely includes the Fed only using, and then halting, unconventional policies like QE in true emergencies and in coordination with the rest of government. In a companion X post on July 21, 2025, issued the same day he delivered a keynote inside the Federal Reserve Building, Bessent compressed the architecture into a single metaphor. The Fed's conduct of monetary policy is a jewel box that should be walled off to preserve its independence. The jewel box is narrow. The walls separate the protected area from everything else. Everything else is the coordination register. Warsh, on Fox Business with Larry Kudlow on July 8, 2025, 2 weeks before he would expand the doctrine on CNBC, 6 months before his nomination, named the operational counterparty. From the Kevin Warsh. So my simple version of this is run the printing press a little bit less, let the balance sheet come down, let Secretary Bessent handle the fiscal accounts, and in so doing,
you can have materially lower interest rates. And 9 days later, on CNBC, Warsh stated the two-register architecture in full.
From the Kevin Warsh:
"What I'd rather have are two people that understand that we have one government, that interest rates are part of it. The Fed has operational independence for that narrow area, and we work together seamlessly because we are on the verge of this transformational moment, and these two people can be on the same team, even if one of them is independent interest rates." Four structural commitments in one passage. Two people at the institutional heads, one government encompassing them, operational independence scoped narrowly to interest rates, seamless coordination on everything else. The phrasing is the architecture. At his confirmation hearing on April 21, 2026, Warsh stated the same two-register doctrine under oath. From his prepared opening statement, filed with the Senate Banking Committee, from the Kevin Warsh: "Fed independence is at its peak in the operational conduct of monetary policy. That degree of independence does not extend to the full range of its congressionally mandated functions. Fed officials are not entitled to the same special deference in their stewardship of public monies, or in bank regulatory and supervisory policy, or in areas affecting international finance, among other matters." And in the same statement's integrated summary, from the Kevin Warsh: "I am committed to ensuring that the conduct of monetary policy remains strictly independent. I am equally committed to working with the administration and Congress on non-monetary matters that are part of the Fed's remit." The architecture is codified: independence narrow, coordination equally committed. The non-monetary areas enumerated explicitly: stewardship of public monies, bank regulatory and supervisory policy, areas affecting international finance. Swap lines, the instrument the Treasury Secretary and a Fed chair coordinate to stabilize dollar funding markets, fall under international finance. They are, by Warsh's own prepared text, in the coordination register. But this is one nominee's prepared text, filed 1 week ago in advance of one hearing. A careful reader will ask whether the architecture is Warsh's personal construction, written for confirmation, tailored to the political moment, to be performed at hearing and retired once the chair is held, or whether it is something Warsh is rendering into institutional commitment from outside himself. That question cannot be answered from Warsh's testimony alone. It requires showing that the same architecture, at the level of mechanisms, cited authorities, and phrasing, is held independently of him. The shared doctrine. Place Warsh's hearing testimony beside Besant's gain-of-function monetary policy. The overlap is not paraphrase. It is convergence at the level of specific mechanisms, specific cited authorities, and occasionally, specific phrasing. Warsh at the hearing: "The balance sheet has become an ordinary recurring force and is part of the reason the Fed is in the business of politics." Besant in the article makes the same case in his signature metaphor. From the Scott Besant: "The extraordinary monetary policy tools unleashed after the 2008 financial crisis have similarly transformed the US Federal Reserve's policy regime, with unpredictable consequences. The Fed's new operating model is effectively a gain-of-function monetary policy experiment. Overuse of non-standard policies, mission creep, and institutional bloat are threatening the central bank's monetary independence." Both invoke Thomas Honig's 2010 dissent as the moral authority for the balance sheet critique. Both cite the distributional consequences, interest rates that get in the cracks, in Warsh's phrase, what Besant calls, quoting Karen Petru, socialism for investors, capitalism for everyone else. Both call the Fed's treasury market footprint fiscal policy in disguise. Both argue independence is earned through performance rather than granted by statute. Stanley Druckenmiller's public critique carries the same doctrine in less formal register. On CNBC on May 7, 2024, 15 months before Warsh's own public reform campaign, 20 months before Warsh's nomination, Druckenmiller, unprompted, attributes the forward guidance abolition doctrine to Warsh by name.
From the Stanley Druckenmiller, Kevin Warsh, when he was in the running for the Fed job, used to talk about reforming the Fed. And I go, Kevin, well, what is the major reform we do? He says, we got to get rid of forward guidance. Transmission, documented by the transmitter. A specific doctrinal move originated with Warsh and was absorbed into Druckenmiller's public critique. The direction of influence is explicit. In the same exchange, Druckenmiller calls the Fed the Great Enabler, a phrase that reappears as a developed institutional claim in Bessent's article 14 months later. The Fed's actions fostered a culture that encouraged reliance on the central bank to bail out poor fiscal policies. And as hearing testimony in Warsh's April 2026 appearance, the balance sheet has fiscal policy in disguise, its normalization putting the Fed in the business of politics. One phrase, three registers, 2 years. The doctrine's diagnostic frame extends beyond monetary policy. In his Senate Appropriations testimony on April 22nd, Bessent said, part of the CDFI program had lost its way in terms of a partisan agenda. The verb is Warsh's, from the hearing the day before. Institutions wander, drift, lose their way. The remedy is retreat to core function and narrowing of scope. Three actors, three institutional channels, one vocabulary. Each of them, describing another, uses the same adjective. Warsh on Druckenmiller in the prepared opening statement. No better, nor a more open-minded economic thinker. Druckenmiller on Warsh in the FT. Very open-minded to the monetary policy approach of former Fed chief Alan Greenspan. Bessent on Warsh at Davos. It's important to have an open mind, let the economy do what it's going to do. Three voices, 3 months, same word. This is more overlap than parallel advocacy produces on any reasonable account. A sympathetic reader can still hold it open. Three economists with the restorationist critique of post-2008 Fed policy reaching similar conclusions is not unheard of. What a sympathetic reader cannot explain from intellectual convergence alone is the biography that accompanies it. The direction of influence Druckenmiller names in May 2024. I go, Kevin, well, what is the major reform we do? Presupposes a relationship. The relationship is documented. The shared history. The convergence has a history older than any of its members' current institutional positions. It has the shape of a professional network whose connecting node is named by each of its members, in public, on the record. Kevin Warsh left the Federal Reserve Board in 2011. In the decade and a half that followed, he was a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution, where he wrote the body of work that became the hearing testimony. He was also something more directly consequential. The person who ran Stanley Druckenmiller's venture capital investments at Duquesne Family Office. On CNBC in July 2025, Warsh named the relationship to defend Bessent against a hostile framing from the host. From the Kevin Warsh, he and I have a similar pedigree. We both worked for the finest investor in the world in Stan Druckenmiller. Warsh says this on his own initiative, on national television, 9 months before the confirmation hearing. The axis does not need to be inferred. It is named by its member in response to an interviewer asking whether Bessent should be trusted with the Fed-Treasury relationship. In his prepared opening statement on April 21, 2026, under oath, Warsh names the relationship again, at greater length, and places Druckenmiller in explicit parity with a former Secretary of State and Treasury. From the Kevin Warsh, in the last 15 years, I've gained deep, hands-on experience in macroeconomics and financial markets, most notably working with Stan Druckenmiller, one of the most successful investors of our time. Stan never held a position in government, but is no less a patriot.
He never got a PhD, but I know of no better nor a more open-minded economic thinker. Like Secretary Schultz, Stan never once sat me down to give a lecture. Instead, he offered me something better, a seat at the table by his side.
The parallelism with George Schultz is analytically significant. Warsh names three personal mentors in the prepared statement. Schultz, Druckenmiller, Condoleezza Rice, his Hoover boss, also a former Secretary of State. Two former cabinet secretaries and one hedge fund principal, placed at equivalent mentor status. The Duquesne investments Warsh selected included Palantir, among the defining listed equities of the AI defense tech axis. The CNBC profile published April 20, 2026, the day before the hearing, contains Warsh's own account of how Duquesne acquired those positions. From the Kevin Warsh, Stan didn't have large positions in private companies in the old version of Duquesne with outside money. I happen to have, in some sense, grown up with some of the people who would end up being this new generation of leaders in venture capital. Peter Thiel and Mark Andreessen come to mind, who have been friends from my days in college. Warsh's personal wealth, approaching $200 million on his financial disclosure, was largely built inside Druckenmiller's office, deploying Druckenmiller's capital into Silicon Valley's leading private companies. The forward-looking pillar of the Warsh doctrine, the claim that AI represents a regime-changing supply shock the Fed must learn to measure, is biographically inseparable from a decade of private capital deployment inside the principal's office. Druckenmiller's relationship with Besant is deeper than Warsh's with either. On January 30, 2026, the day Warsh was nominated, Druckenmiller gave an extended interview to the Financial Times. From the FT's reporting, from the Amelia Pollard, Druckenmiller has also been a longtime mentor to Scott Bessent, the US Treasury Secretary. He first hired Bessent to work at Soros Fund Management more than three decades ago. After Druckenmiller exited the firm and Bessent moved on a decade later, the now Treasury Secretary later started his own hedge fund, Key Square Capital, with money from Druckenmiller. Bessent is not in the Hoover-Duquesne Silicon Valley circuit, but his convergence with the Warsh-Druckenmiller doctrine was public well before the Treasury appointment. Gain-of-function monetary policy was a fund manager's critique, not a Treasury Secretary's position paper. In the same FT interview, on the day of Warsh's nomination, Druckenmiller endorsed the coordination architecture in his own voice. From the Stanley Druckenmiller, I'm really excited about the partnership between him and Bessent. Having an accord between the Treasury Secretary and Fed Chair is ideal. The word accord is not casual. It echoes Warsh's July 2025 CNBC proposal for a new Treasury-Fed accord modeled on the 1951 agreement. It echoes the language Warsh used inside the same CNBC appearance. It would make the accord easier if the same person was on both sides of it. Druckenmiller, speaking to the FT on the day the nomination is announced, deploys the term to name what the axis is now institutionally positioned to pursue. The three actors, across 14 months of public statements, use the same word to describe the same structural arrangement. A reader willing to grant both shared doctrine and shared history can still hold that three people who know each other and agree about monetary policy are not a structural phenomenon. Friendship produces correlation. Professional proximity produces vocabulary. What would distinguish a friendship from a structural arrangement is whether the convergence is complementary, whether each of the three occupies a position within the doctrine that the others cannot, and whether the positions fit together into something larger than any of them alone. The recognition. Look at what each of the three produces inside the shared doctrine. Druckenmiller names, the Fed has been the great enabler. Stay in his lane. Don't go on 60 Minutes. You're not a rock star, okay?
You're the Fed chairman. We got to get rid of forward guidance, attributed to Warsh. Druckenmiller's role is diagnostic. He fixes the problem in vivid, hedge fund principle language that gets picked up and reused. The phrases travel.
Besson theorizes. Gain-of-function monetary policy is the most intellectually complete axis document. It builds the analytical framework. QE as gain-of-function experiment, the Fed as institution subject to mission creep and institutional bloat, monetary policy independence as a jewel box that must be walled off, Honig and Petru as cross-ideological authorities for the distributional critique. Besson coins the structural metaphors and develops the mechanisms. His role is architectural. He produces the analytical scaffolding on which the prescriptions rest. Warsh codifies. The prepared opening statement of April 21, 2026 is the most institutionally specific axis document. It enumerates the non-monetary domains: stewardship of public monies, bank regulatory and supervisory policy, areas affecting international finance, where independence does not operate at its peak. It commits the Fed under oath to working with the administration and Congress on non-monetary matters. It places Druckenmiller and Schultz in explicit parity as mentors. Warsh's role is legal. He translates the diagnosis and the theory into institutional commitment at confirmation hearing. The three registers are visible in the vocabulary they share and the phrases they do not. Great enabler is Druckenmiller. It appears in Besson's prose without attribution, but with identical causal structure. It reappears in Warsh's hearing as fiscal policy in disguise. Mission creep and institutional bloat are Besson. Warsh uses confusion of roles that leads to a set of mission creep at hearing. Jewel box is Besson. The structure becomes Warsh's. Fed independence is at its peak in the operational conduct of monetary policy. Stay in its lane transits from Powell's own self-description through Druckenmiller's weaponization, through Becky Quick's on-air framing, into Warsh's prepared text. Each phrase travels. Each arrives at a different register and does different work. And now the recognition. Ask what would happen if one of the three tried to do what another does. Druckenmiller on CNBC cannot produce gain-of-function monetary policy. The piece is a scholarly argument in an academic-adjacent venue, dense with institutional mechanisms and cross-ideological citations. It requires a register Druckenmiller does not operate in and would not want to. Besson, as Treasury Secretary, cannot make the phrases land the way Druckenmiller can. A cabinet officer who called the Fed chair a rock star, playing to 60 Minutes, would be front-page news for weeks. The phrase works precisely because Druckenmiller has no institutional position to protect. Warsh, as nominee, cannot appear on CNBC Weekly speaking about Powell the way Druckenmiller did. A confirmation candidate with that record of public commentary would be filibustered before his hearing. The registers are not interchangeable. Each is accessible only to its occupant. What appears at first glance to be three people converging on similar conclusions is, on closer reading, three people producing what only they can produce, with the productions assembling into one doctrine. Parallel advocates reach similar conclusions from independent paths, and each produces the full argument in their own voice. That is not what is happening here. One intellectual project is being rendered into three institutional voices at the registers each actor is positioned to occupy. The operational debut. On April 22, 2026, one day after Warsh's hearing, in a different Senate chamber, at a Senate Appropriations Financial Services Subcommittee hearing on the Treasury FY 2027 budget, the coordination register left the page. Senator Chris Van Hollen asked Besson about a United Arab Emirates request for a swap line through the Treasury's Exchange Stabilization Fund. Besson's response. From the Scott Besson. Many of our Gulf allies have requested swap lines. Whether it's from the Federal Reserve or the Treasury,
They are to maintain order in the dollar funding markets and to prevent the sale of US assets in a disorderly way. The load-bearing evidence here is not the clause. It is what the clause does not say.
The two facilities Besant names operate under different statutory foundations. Federal Reserve dollar liquidity swap lines operate under Section 14 of the Federal Reserve Act. Each line and each draw requires authorization by the Federal Open Market Committee. Outstanding balances are reported weekly in the Fed's H4.1 release. The Treasury's Exchange Stabilization Fund operates under Section 10 of the Gold Reserve Act of 1934, codified at 31 U.S.C. Section 5302. The Secretary of the Treasury, with presidential approval, has broad discretion to deal in foreign exchange and credit instruments. Oversight is largely after the fact, through monthly reports. The facilities have historically been operated in coordination. The New York Fed often acts as fiscal agent for ESF transactions, and joint ESF-SOMA interventions were routine from the 1960s through the 1990s. But they are not legally equivalent. The Fed instrument requires committee authorization. The Treasury instrument requires the Secretary's signature. One is a central bank liquidity operation. The other is an executive branch foreign policy and exchange management instrument. A careful reader will note that the Treasury Secretary cannot commit the Fed to extend a Fed swap line, and Besant was not asked to. He could have drawn that distinction. Treasury secretaries have drawn it consistently for decades when questioned about joint operations, precisely because the distinction is what protects the Fed from the politics of the ESF. The standard answer to Van Hollen's line of questioning, where a senator has linked UAE capital flows, crypto ventures, chip export relaxation, and a swap request into one sequence, is to separate the instruments. The ESF is my authority. The Fed's swap framework is the FOMC's. The two should not be conflated. That is what a Treasury Secretary publicly committed to the jewel box doctrine would say under hostile questioning. Besant did not say it. He answered as if the two instruments were interchangeable means to a single purpose he was positioned to describe jointly. The non-distinction is doing the work. It is consistent with Warsh's prepared text, which enumerates areas affecting international finance outside the domain of peak Fed independence. It is consistent with the doctrine Besant himself has argued in print, that the coordination register governs international finance. What it is not consistent with is the Powell Fed under which international finance has operated for the last 7 years, where the FOMC authorizes its swap facilities on its own timetable, and the Treasury Secretary does not publicly package Fed and ESF operations as equivalent choices. The exchange is short. The record is clear. What it documents is not fungibility declared, but the absence of a separation that a Treasury Secretary committed to the jewel box would have drawn. The path foreclosed. Given what has been established, that the architecture is publicly specified, that it is shared across three actors with documented professional history and complementary intellectual labor, and that the coordination register is operationally live within 24 hours of the hearing, the question of whether the Warsh chairmanship will coordinate with Treasury on non-monetary matters is settled by the prepared text itself. It will. Warsh committed to it under oath. The operational debut occurred the next day. Confirmation, when it comes, will ratify an arrangement the prepared text has already specified. The text commits to the fact of coordination. The text does not commit to its character. A coordination register can operate with the Fed retaining institutional discretion. Consulted on Treasury operations that intersect its authorities, independent on operations the Fed itself initiates, publishing its own timeline for balance sheet adjustments. Or it can operate with the Fed following Treasury's judgments, extending facilities when Treasury requests them on Treasury's terms,
deferring publication of its own decisions to Treasury's schedule. The architecture accommodates both. What remains testable is which version the chairmanship will operate.
The first measurement concerns the WASH Fed's response to Treasury coordination requests. WASH's prepared text places international finance in the coordination register, but coordination has a range. At one end, Fed Treasury communication on operational parameters, with the Fed retaining institutional discretion over which facilities to extend, on what terms, to which counterparties. At the other end, Treasury requests Fed accommodation. The swap line pattern, Gulf allies, Asian allies, scope of counterparty list, terms, over the WASH chairmanship's first year will show which end of the range the coordination register is operating at. A WASH Fed that extends Fed swap facilities whenever the Treasury Secretary judges them appropriate on Treasury's proposed terms is operating the coordination register as subordination. A WASH Fed that extends them under its own institutional judgment on terms it independently specifies is operating the coordination register as coordination. The second measurement concerns the ordinary versus emergency character of Bessent's sanctions as currency management posture. His April 22 testimony described a 250 million barrel oil market operation through sanctions relief, justified as keeping global prices near $100 rather than $150. Currency management executed through Treasury's sanctions authority with explicit macroeconomic intent. Bessent's own article argues the coordination register is reserved for true emergencies. If the sanctions relief framework continues as a standing operational instrument rather than an emergency measure, the coordination register's scope has expanded beyond the doctrine's true emergencies specification. This is a measurement against the prepared text itself. The third measurement concerns personnel. Druckenmiller's 2021 Wall Street Journal op-ed on dollar reserve status was co-authored with Christian Broder, his Duquesne partner and a former New York Fed research economist. If Broder or similar figures from the Duquesne intellectual circle appear in senior research or policy roles at the WASH Fed, Division of Research and Statistics, senior economic staff, non-voting advisors to the FOMC, the axis will have produced observable staffing convergence. Personnel is where doctrine becomes operational at the research brief level, the staffing of which the chair substantially controls. Watching who appears on the board's senior economic staff will be more informative than watching communications. Each measurement is specific. Each is public. Each will accumulate across the chairmanship. What remains? The pillars closed with, the doctrine is WASH's. What the chairmanship produces will say whose purposes the doctrine served. That closing was exact within its scope. The scope was the chair. The record supports a wider scope. The doctrine is shared across three actors, Kevin WASH, Scott Bessent, and Stanley Druckenmiller, whose public statements over 2 years converge on one architecture at three complementary registers, with shared cited authorities, shared diagnostic vocabulary extended across institutions, shared characterization of each other, and a connecting node named publicly by each. The architecture is two register: narrow operational independence on monetary policy proper, explicit coordination on stewardship of public monies, bank regulation, and international finance. The coordination register has been specified in print, in television appearances, and in hearing testimony. It debuted operationally within 24 hours of the Fed chair's confirmation hearing. The doctrine claims to replace a regime, the demand management Keynesian regime the three actors describe as having produced inflation, institutional bloat, distributional regression, and a Fed that wandered from its mandate. Whether the regime the Axis claims to replace is the regime the FOMC archive actually shows is a question the primary sources of the Axis cannot answer. It remains, for now, open. The doctrine is shared. The architecture is published.
the coordination register is operational. This has been the Monetary Blog from the FOMC Insight Engine at causalityineconomics.com.